it's giving recruiters more time to do the more the human element of recruitment. You know, a machine doesn't have the same objectivity that a human does. So being able to have, you know, deeper shortlisting conversations once the kind of longlisting is done by the automation, being able to have better strategic input to the workforce planning in the organization as well, because you're able to remove some of the more mundanity in your daily activity, you're able to concentrate on the more strategic areas. So, you know, now we're seeing a better opportunity for people to get involved in strategic workforce planning.
Constraints drive innovation. Hey everyone, it's Matt here for another episode of Thinking Inside the Box, a show where we discuss the innovative ways organizations and their leaders overcome complex issues at work. If you're interested in checking out our other content, you can find us at our shiny new website, insidetheboxpodcast.com, and on all of your favorite podcast platforms by searching Thinking Inside the Box. And if you enjoy the work we're doing here, consider leaving us a five-star rating, a comment, and subscribing. It ensures you get updated whenever we release new content and really helps amplify our message. In today's episode, I chat with Martin Redstone, conversational and generative AI consultant at PeopleBots. With close to 20 years of experience in the recruitment industry, and nearly seven of those dedicated to the exploration of automation and AI, Martin is a leading thinker at the intersection of talent and technology. He believes strongly in harnessing the power of artificial intelligence to create more efficient, equitable, and enjoyable recruitment experiences. And our discussion followed a similar track, beginning first with the evolution of recruitment technology over the past two decades, along the way highlighting pivotal moments that have reshaped the industry. And before long, we shifted to the role of chatbots and conversational AI, addressing not only the practical use cases for HR leaders, but also the behavioral psychology influences that ultimately inform the design, ensuring that they're intuitive and engaging for users. Longtime listeners of the show know how passionate I am about how humans interact with technology, and Martin was the perfect sparring partner for that conversation. And it was another in a long line of memorable conversations that I hope you enjoy as much as we did recording it. And now I bring you Martin Redstone. Martin Redstone, we spent a wonderful day and a bit together in Athens, Greece. It was very romantic and educational. Looking forward to seeing you today. How's it going?
Yeah, great. Thanks. Yeah, no, fond memories of that romantic time that we had in Athens a few weeks ago. No, it's great. It's going well. Thanks, Matt. Thanks for inviting me on.
I'm looking forward to this conversation for a number of reasons. We got a chance to talk about our respective careers during that event. We were at DigiHR in Athens, Greece. My first time at Greece in terms of going to a conference. I know Martin wasn't your first time, but certainly a unique experience. We heard some unique challenges within that workforce. But before we get into those details, I'd love to learn a bit more about you, your background, your experiences, and what's led you to today.
Yeah, absolutely. So as you said, I'm Martin Redstone. I've been in the recruitment industry the last 18 years. Before that, I was an engineer, degree in computer science. But very, very quickly in my recruitment career, realized that technology can help unblock some certain parts of the process, basically, and move very quickly into recruitment technology. I've been doing that for the last 12 years. And 6 years ago, I had the opportunity to join a recruitment chatbot vendor and did so because I'm very, very excited about technology that helps with interaction between human and computer. And yeah, and joined that 6 years ago, stayed with them for a glorious 2 years. And then broke out on my own. And now I am a conversational AI consultant to the recruitment industry. What that really means in principle is I help mainly in-house talent acquisition teams to implement conversational AI solutions that they've purchased. So I'm the kind of implementation project manager for hire, as it were, specifically for conversational AI. And over the last 11 months, shall we say, I've also built up another stream, which is helping recruiters train up in the use of generative AI.
Well, I think you're underselling what you do. I think it's a bit more than a project manager role, Martin, when you're supporting organizations. I think to most of the leaders I talk to, whether they're in HR or finance or IT, many of them are still trying to put their arms around chatbots. And maybe they have an understanding of the technology and its use cases, but they're trying to contextualize it for their organization. They may have some limitations around their technology architecture. Maybe it's a resourcing or an investment issue, but there's a gap. So what I think what you're bringing to that is, yes, of course, the accountability around project management, day-to-day management of milestones, but you're also providing a ton of insights and perspective about best practices, what works, what doesn't work. And I'm sure you've seen a number of good intentions gone awry over the course of your career. I'm just curious, as you step back and look at the totality of the time you spent in recruitment tech, what are some of the key milestones that stand out for you as the profession's gone through an evolution around digitization?
Wow. What a fantastic question. So the key milestones that stand out for me, do you know, the first project that I ever did was implementing online timesheeting for a temporary staffing agency. And this was in 2008, 2009. It was kind of my first foray into recruitment technology. And this is kind of the standardization that's happened throughout my career. So this is a fantastic start to this answer. So the recruiters were like, no, our candidates were not like this. They still enjoy sending faxes of their timesheets into the office. They will not take on online timesheeting. They will hate it. Okay, fine. You know, because nobody's on the internet, nobody does anything online, but that's fine. If that's your expectation, let's launch it and let's take a look at what the adoption rate looks like. And, you know, week one adoption rate was like 68%, something like that. And week two, it was more and more and more. And by the end of the first couple of months, there was like one timesheet coming in over fax or something. So it was probably my dad. He loves a fax machine. Yeah. So that kind of started this pushback that I consistently have had throughout my career, which is our candidates won't like that. Our people won't like that. They like doing things this way because that's the way we've always done it. And that's the horrible phrase that you hear all the time, is that that's the way we've always done it. And that's the way that works. And that's not always the best way. It's just the way that people have got used to. And one of the biggest challenges that I've had throughout my career has been getting people over this concept that candidates are not some kind of subset of the human species. You know, they work in exactly the same way that you and I work. They have expectations in the same way that all consumers and all people out there do. And that kind of goes along with everything that I've done in technology, whether it be implementing recruitment online timesheets, whether it be CRM systems, whether it be chatbots. It's the same thing over and over again. So yeah, so I suppose that was my kind of key milestone, and that's continued throughout my career.
That's very depressing, Martin. I'm sorry to hear that. jokes aside, I totally understand, because it's change. And despite the fact that you have a vision to the future, the individuals in those roles are thinking about very little than what's in front of them today.
Yeah.
And they're not letting their minds wander to what's possible around AI and chatbots. They're thinking about the fundamental parts of their roles, not this small little niche part of it. And organizations have been guilty, and I've worked for many of them, of undervaluing the experience of candidates and employees compared to the experience provided to their customers or their shareholders. And I think that gap is starting to shrink now, and technology makes that more possible to provide a more consistent experience to a wider subset of people. But when I think, Martin, about the first ATS technology I ever implemented 15 plus years ago, it was very clear to me from day one that this was a tool built for the administrator.
Yep.
And had very little in mind for the actual candidate. It was about, how do I ingest hundreds, if not thousands, of resumes and make it easy for me to do my job? The experience for the candidate, we'll figure a program out for that. But the reality is, we'll bake in hardware-wise or software-wise the functionality necessary for the administrator. And I think it's an important question, because I think you provide a unique perspective given your breadth of time in the industry to say that we're going through another cycle of change, and another cycle of change that is both predictable insofar as the resistance we're going to experience into it, but also insofar as the opportunity we have to realize something really that is great. And when I think about chatbots in particular and conversational AI, I do see a world where you can introduce a more, maybe intimate's not the right word, but at least a more human experience to candidates, even though they may not be talking to an actual human on the other side of that interaction.
Yeah.
So from your perspective, where is the market, like just broad strokes, where's the market at in terms of conversational AI and recruitment? And what are a couple of the use cases that you think are most prominent or relevant or apparent for organizations that are maybe just dipping their toe in the water around it?
So I'll split it into kind of two areas. I'll talk about recruitment and HR because the use cases are slightly different across them. In the world of recruitment, I think from an adoption perspective, we're a little bit behind the kind of the general kind of worldwide adoption of chatbot technology. So we are behind in recruitment. And I think that's, again, there's this kind of fascination with we are a people related process and people like talking to people. And like you said, you know, people don't. They want immediacy, convenience and agency. And a chatbot can give them that when they're dealing with a process. So obvious use cases for chatbots in recruitment are search and apply on a career site, assessment and screening as well, obvious use cases. So those are the kind of two bigger use cases that we see for chatbots. The search and apply would have things like FAQs around the company, the role, etc. So it wouldn't just be a case of searching and hit apply. It would be searching and have a conversation about the role, which is something you can't have with a recruiter because they're too busy. And so once you're happy, apply, and you can go straight into a screening conversation and know almost immediately whether you're going to be right for taking forward from a shortlisting perspective. So the benefits to that are very, very obvious. You know, you're not having any of these issues with ghosting, your candidate experience is improved, your time to hire reduces because you're not having to put people into a funnel and wait and wait and wait and wait and wait. So that's the recruitment side of things. On the HR side of things, we're getting there. I think that most HR leaders understand that there is benefit to conversational technology. And we've certainly seen in the last few years, certainly kind of towards the end of COVID, a larger adoption of chatbot technology in HR. Again, you know, some obvious use cases there. The first one, HR service desk automation. So answering FAQs about policy, process, procedure to do with HR in much the same way we see the automation of the IT service desk or contact centers as well. So that's the first obvious use case. The second use case is onboarding and learning and development. So what we're seeing now is almost having this kind of coaching buddy in a conversational tool where we can interact with employees, provide them with a fantastic experience and knowledge on tap, opportunity to coach, be coached by a chatbot, and opportunity to be onboarded by a chatbot as well. And we've seen that in many different organizations already. So I think that there's vast opportunity across the entire talent lifecycle to have a conversational tool, but those are kind of the top use cases for me.
Hey everyone, it's Matt here. I hope you're enjoying today's conversation. And before we continue, I want to update you on my latest creative project, This Week at Work. Every Friday at 7 a.m. Pacific Standard Time, that's 10 a.m. Eastern and 3 p.m. GMT, my good friend Chris Rainey of HR Leaders and I discuss the latest trending topics on the minds of executives globally, from organizational culture to technology and the future of work. We cover it all. And we invite some of our favorite colleagues to join us, from Dave Ulrich to Whitney Johnson, and executives from iconic brands such as NASA, Krispy Kreme, and WebMD. What can I say? We like to keep things interesting. And if you've been following us for a while, you'll no doubt recognize the fun partnership Chris and I have developed over years podcasting together. We're not afraid to be real, share our own challenges, and ask the tough questions. Joining? Well, that part's easy. Follow me on LinkedIn, click the bell icon on the top right of my profile, and you'll get notified when we go live. And now, back to our discussion. Well, and I think it speaks to a broader trend around digitization within the profession. And the holy grail, of course, is to reduce or eliminate altogether the amount of manual administration that HR is tasked with, which is cumbersome at the best of cases and then overwhelming in the worst of cases. And Organizations have made strides, certainly in digitization. And, you know, I chuckled a little bit. We talked about you're moving your spreadsheet from the fax into the digital, you know, because I remember that transition as well. But I also know that in the last couple of years, we've certainly added more regulation to organizations and increased the level of complexity, whether it's tax regulation, whether it's hybrid work consideration. So simultaneously, we've made things more complex and provided better tools to do that. So I don't know if we net out being any more effective than we were 5 years ago, but at points well taken. And I think the graduation of the technology such that as the population continues to become more digitally native, and you know, demographics are a cruel object, and that we know that people who are 50 will be 60 10 years from now. We know that increasingly the workforce is being comprised of people who are digital natives. And as a consequence, they're much more comfortable and confident and receptive to the idea of interacting with technology as an interface than perhaps their more traditional baby boomer Gen X counterparts that see it actually as an inhuman experience and perhaps even as a fault or a slight. I remember the first time, Martin, I sent my Calendly link to somebody in the boomer generation and the response I got back was not that pleasant. And I'm thinking, but I'm just trying to be convenient so I can facilitate an easier access. But they saw it as you're pushing me off to a machine, pick up the phone and call me and we'll figure it out one-to-one on the phone. And I get excited about a world where HR can relieve themselves of some of those more mundane administrivia so we can focus on the things that are valuable. As we shift from a world where administrivia is being done by people into technology and conversational AI absorbs a bit of that recruitment administration, when you're talking to organizations and their leaders, how do they spend the time that they recoup from the administrivia? What are they spending their time doing today that they maybe they couldn't do before? What are some of the success stories you're hearing about that reallocation of effort?
I see. Sorry. Yeah. So what we're seeing on the recruitment side, and actually, it's really interesting when you say about, you know, dehumanizing the experience. Actually, what we're seeing is quite the opposite on the recruitment side, where actually it's giving recruiters more time to do the human element of recruitment. A machine doesn't have the same objectivity that a human does. So being able to have, you know, deeper shortlisting conversations once the kind of long listing is done by the automation, being able to have better strategic input to the workforce planning in the organization as well. I think that's one of the biggest things that I've seen as a benefit is that because you're able to remove some of the more mundanity in your daily activity, you're able to concentrate on the more strategic areas. So, you know, now we're seeing a better opportunity for people to get involved in strategic workforce planning, which means that from a recruiter's perspective, they're getting a lot more lead time in understanding what the hiring requirements are for the organization rather than being more reactive. They're now being given the opportunity to be more proactive as a recruitment team. So that's a massive benefit for recruiters. From an HR side of things, much the same, but being a stronger, more strategic business partner. I talked earlier about that shared service center, that HR service desk kind of automation. And what that means is that rather than being involved in certain things that are really, really mundane and really robotic, you know, I used at DigiHR the example of IBM having, you know, their HR team having to get involved with staff transfer requests because, you know, the vast majority of the time there was an error in them. And now that managers can do that via a chatbot and not have to have HR involved, the time given back to them has been incredible. And they've used that again to be strategic business partners. And this is the interesting thing. You know, I hear so many times about recruiters and senior kind of recruitment leaders wanting, as they call it, you know, a chair at the table, wanting a place at the table. And for me, that means, you know, they want to be part of the strategic leadership of the organization. You can't be a strategic leader unless you've got the time to be a strategic leader. And that means removing the things that aren't valuable in your life from a time perspective. So that's what we're doing. We're removing that time. We're giving them the opportunity to start being more strategic, which will open up the opportunity for TA, talent acquisition and recruitment to finally get a place at the table.
When you're thinking about an experience, whether it's an employee experience, candidate experience, you're thinking about a series of interactions that often involve a conversational AI component. That could be the first interaction with the organization to query about a job possibility. It could be questions about the organization's culture or financials or expansion plans. It could be questions about the logistics of the interview, where to go to for what, or, you know, things of that more mundane nature. But the fact of the matter is that when people are interacting with chatbots, they're expecting some sort of communication back and forth. And I know there's been a recent push within the industry to make those more relatable, more warm. And I'm curious, as you're planning out your strategy or working with organizations on their tools, how are you helping them introduce levels of humanity into the chatbot? Is this a training exercise using behavioral psychology? Are you journey mapping out the experience and programming it into the bot? Like, maybe just talk a bit about how you make it, take it from a cold, stale technology that gives you very matter-of-fact answers into something that really does drive that more personalized experience that we're talking about today.
Yeah, absolutely. So look, you know, the lovely thing about evolving the term from chatbot to conversational AI, because ultimately they're the same thing, is that you get this emphasis on conversational. And this is the bit that people now expect, is a more conversational interaction rather than a very, like you said, binary, boring, not exciting experience. And so that's what we do. So there's a whole subsect of UX called conversation design. And so we implement conversation design techniques to build the experience of that conversation. So that can be everything from tone of voice. Are we a fun, dynamic company? Are we professional? Are we informal? All those kind of, you know, key kind of areas around the dynamics of the conversation, but also the interactions within the conversation as well. So I was talking to somebody earlier who was asking me for some hints and tips. They were setting up their own chatbot. And I said, look, you know, the best thing you can do is start with telling somebody exactly what the chatbot can do for them. So it helped them, you know, to help the chatbot to provide a good experience. And so what that means is saying, hey, you know, welcome to our chatbot. Here's some of the things you can ask me. Here's some of the things that I can help you with. And straight away, you're setting up the experience and the expectation rather than allowing somebody to jump straight in and go, what's the weather like today? And the chatbot going, I don't have a clue what you're doing. You stuck your head out the window. That's just kind of a basic kind of example. But ultimately, there's a lot involved in mapping that out. There's user acceptance testing of the conversation. There's dialogue mapping. We do something called Wizard of Oz testing, which is where we have two people sitting back to back, actually having the conversations that we expect the chatbot to have. There's lots of things that we do to make sure that the conversation itself is a superb experience. And that's the difference between chatbots that pop up on a website and people go, oh, not this again, and chatbots that actually delight people and have a great experience.
And then how do you affect the same for different stakeholders? Because we're not all the same. I mean, we have different personalities. If we operate in a global context, there's regionalization that comes into play. How do you factor in some of those diversity and nuances that come into play when it comes to dealing with humans?
It's a really, really good question. Really good question. The first thing we have to do is map out those personas. So a lot of the time when you're doing it from an organizational perspective, you have to kind of generalize that it's an employee of the company. This is the situation they're in when they interact with this chatbot, et cetera, et cetera. And so unfortunately, because, you know, if you've got a large company with hundreds of thousands of people or tens of thousands of people, you have to generalize quite a bit. However, the regionalization is really important. So one of the things that I will always advise people or even do myself is not to just use a translation tool. So build the chatbot in English, translate it into Spanish, into French, into German, into Japanese or whatever. It's actually the best way to do it. And the way that I've always done it is to actually have a local person working with me to regionalize that conversation, because again, it's conversational and every person in every part of the world has nuances when it comes to the way that they converse with the people around them. And that's what we want to make sure the experience is. It's like having a conversation with a local. So there's no point in running your English chatbot through Google Translate. To be fair, ChatGPT is coming close to providing that kind of experience. So we are leaning on that quite a bit, but we're still verifying with locals when we go through UAT testing.
I think that's a really important consideration. It's something that I really hadn't thought about, because you're right. We're talking about multi-language, large language models. These are, you know, large corpuses of information. And to have that regional context is critical, because things can get lost in translation as you try and adapt. And, you know, obviously ChatGPT, for all of its incredible advancements, has at times received a bit of a negative, you know, slant on it because of either the recency of information, the accuracy of information, the sourcing of information. And we need to understand that artificial intelligence is not perfection. It is not an instant path to the correct, most perfect answer. It is meant to be another tool in your kit to arrive at some sort of destination. And I think that's the reason why the conversational piece around AI is so critical, because it requires a two-way dialogue to get to that perfect answer. We're never going to get to a place where someone pops onto a digital interface and the chatbot just knows what they're thinking and gives them the answer. Like, there's going to have to be a dialogue back and forth. And whether it's ChatGPT or whether it's a recruitment chatbot, there's an opportunity for the experience to really inform that. And to that point, I'm curious, Martin. So as organizations are going through a series of interactions, let's just say I've piloted a recruitment chatbot and I've been testing it for 3 months. What's the process like on the back end when it comes to reconciling all those insights to really feed a continuous improvement loop so that that chatbot can get smarter, more, can provide better service, can be of better support over time?
So again, a superb question. It's almost like you had these pre-prepared. Right. So basically, you hit the nail on the head, you know, and the whole point of launching a chatbot in any instance, whether it's recruitment, HR, retail, whatever, it's not just fire and forget, you know, and ultimately you're still going to have situations where the chatbot isn't providing the best experience. Now, it depends on the technology that's been used, but a lot of conversational AI technology gives you the ability to look back over the conversation logs, look for keywords such as keywords that represent frustration, basically, and then use those parts of the conversation to retrain the chatbot. So this is why I talk about having a chatbot is almost like having a new member of staff in the team. And that's exactly the way that you need to think about it. You know, when a new member of staff comes in, they're not going to be 100% perfect because they need to learn about the organization. They need to learn about the way that you interact with people around you. Even things like the tone of voice, how do you expect somebody to talk on the phone? All those kind of things. And it's the same with a chatbot. You don't just have a new member of staff coming on the first day and off they go. You onboard them, you do check-in meetings, you make sure they don't need anything. And it's the same, exactly the same. You know, you onboard a chatbot, you keep it going for a few months, you know, you check in on them, you see whether or not they're performing properly, you point them in the right direction when they're not. And that's exactly it. And you know, I've adopted this kind of term called a bot master. I've kind of stolen that from a friend in the industry. And that's what you need to have on your team is a bot master. So, you know, they're the people that ultimately check in on the chatbot, make sure it's running properly, and provide it with learning opportunity when it's not.
I want to advocate for the term bot keeper. But bot master is pretty good too. I'm a fan for a more or less hierarchical terminology. So keeper to me provides something.
Yeah.
Jokes aside, when I think about the next part of this conversation, Martin, this is the exciting part for me because now we get a chance to put on our tinfoil hats. As you think about the future of conversational AI and recruitment, what do you see 3 years, 5 years down the road? Where are we going to get to as an industry? Assuming we go through the change adoption curve we've gone through times before, where are we going to end up 2030 recruitment conversational AI?
Oh, love this. So somebody else asked me a similar question recently, and this is the answer I gave them. And I'm sorry for anybody who's listening or watching whose devices get triggered when I go through this. So imagine in a few years' time, I'm working in a job and I'm not happy. I've been working remote for the last 7 years since the end of COVID. And now my boss has said, it's time to come back to the office. Not happy, want to find a new job. So I pick up my phone and I say, hey, Siri, sorry, everyone. Hey, Siri, I'm looking for a new job. And you know, I'm not happy. I want to work remote. I'm not allowed to work remote anymore. Can you go and find me a new job? Siri says, yep, sure. Would you like me to use the information and credentials that are in your wallet? Because obviously CVs will be dead by then. We'll have, you know, blockchain verified credentials that are held in our wallet. Hat tip to CV wallet. I really like what they're doing. So off it goes. A couple of minutes later, Siri comes back and says, hey, Martin, I found 283 jobs that match your requirements. I've already had a conversation with 128 of them. Because they've got bots as well. So we've had a bot to bot conversation. We've got to the point where we've booked you into 13 interviews all next week, all in your calendar. And that's it in a nutshell. So the way that I see it, and that's kind of that's the end of the story, but let's give a little bit of light to that story. So one of the biggest challenges that we're facing in the recruitment industry right now is AI powered candidates. Candidates that can create CVs with AI, candidates that can create cover letters. Sorry, I keep using the word CV, but for your international audience, resumes. So, you know, create resumes and CVs from AI, create cover letters from AI, but also now can apply to hundreds, if not thousands of jobs all at the same time using AI. So we've got this big problem. It's no longer about finding candidates. It's about dealing with a huge number of AI-powered applications. Now, I don't see that as a problem. I see that as a challenge, but I don't see that as cheating or any of these other words that are going on right now. I see it as an opportunity for us to transform and to meet them at that point. So, as I said, one of the key use cases for conversational AI recruitment is application screening. Why can't we meet the AI-generated application with our screening bot, have bot-to-bot conversation going on, you know, matching people up and giving people the opportunity to move forward really quickly. So that's where I see the future of conversational AI in the candidate focus part of talent acquisition in the future, is actually just automating top of the funnel, so that our new metric in the world of recruitment is time to conversation rather than time to hire. The other place I see it is obviously in the world of co-pilots. So we're talking about the employee experience as a recruiter as well. I think adoption of technology is really difficult. There's such a big barrier in terms of getting people to use technology properly. That's why co-pilots are amazing. Being able to interact with your technology through natural language prompts. You know, Satya Nadella, the CEO of Microsoft, said that's the future of computing. I totally and utterly agree with him. Keyboards, mouse, touchscreens, they're all going to disappear and we're going to be talking to our technology. So, you know, hopefully by 2030, we'll see a lot more of that in our industry, and we'll see a lot more people being able to be more productive in their jobs through the use of conversational AI on the front end of the technology that they use as well.
Well, you can fit me for the same size tinfoil hat, because I agree with you entirely. And I think we are going to get to a place where technology becomes that preliminary proxy, that broker that you pointed out. And this move to a place where we have, call it a co-pilot, concierge, whatever you want to refer to it as, broadly in society, we're all going to get to a place very soon when we have that. And whether we call it Siri or Alexa, apologies to those folks listening, but whether we call it that or something else, we're going to have the ability to interact with information and technology using that audio interface, a voice interface, a text-based and chat-based interface. And that's going to be a really exciting thing for folks that are going to be able to really, again, dedicate their time to the activities that are going to provide the most amount of value human to human.
Yeah.
Martin, if we've been successful in anything, I think it's at getting people excited about the future. For those folks that are interested in perhaps learning more about this type of line of work, maybe they're interested in a career potentially, or looking at implementing in their organization, what are some places that you go to for sources, resources, as people are trying to collect kind of a corpus of knowledge?
Corpus of knowledge on conversational AI. So there's loads and loads of stuff out there. It's actually becoming more and more difficult to sift through it all to keep up to date. But for me, one of my go-to areas on the web is a guy called Brett Kinsella. He's kind of one of the godfathers of conversational AI, and he runs voicebot.ai, as well as a Substack called Synthedia. Yeah, Synthetic Media. So that's Synthedia, and it's all about generative AI and what have you. So those are kind of my two areas. He's fantastic. I've had the opportunity to meet him a number of times now as well, but that's kind of one of my go-tos in terms of what's happening in the world. So I would recommend them. In terms of careers, if people want a career in conversational AI, I'll plug myself. I actually run I founded a job board 3 years ago for conversational AI careers, bot-jobs.com. I wish I'd have called it AIjobs.com now, but there we go. So if you're looking for a career, that's probably the best place to go. And if you're looking for anything to do with conversational AI in HR and recruitment, feel free to also subscribe to my LinkedIn newsletter, which is called HAIR. It stands for AI in HR. It's quite a nice play on words, but ironically quite funny as well. I've relaunched my newsletter several weeks ago. So feel free to subscribe to that as well.
We will put all those details in the show notes of this podcast. Martin, thank you so much for a great conversation today. And I'm looking forward to our next romantic Mediterranean trip.
I look forward to it.
Take care.
Cheers.
Bento HR is a digital transformation consultancy working at the intersection of strategy, technology, and people operations. We partner with organizations, private equity, and venture capital firms to accelerate value creation and identify the organization's highest leverage initiatives. And this can take place in many forms, from strategic planning and alignment to technology procurement, implementation, and integration, along with organizational design, process reengineering, and change management. With our proven track record of working with complex, high-growth organizations, we provide a lens that goes beyond the balance sheet, increasing enterprise readiness, resilience, and value. For more information, check us out at bentohr.com.